call the House Special Committee on Telecommunications to order. The date is March 5th, and the time is 1:05. The subject of our meeting today will be an introduction to the University of Alaska Computer Network, known as UACN. Here testifying before us in Juneau will be Conrad Deep, the Executive Director of the UACN Network. And in Anchorage will be Joe Joyner, ACC Instructor, Eddie Lynch, Director of Office of Instructional Telecommunications, and Mim Carlson, the Director of ACC Social Science Division. And I understand that the Chancellor of ACC, Herb Lyon, is also in Anchorage. Just wanted to check and make sure that everybody was online.
We are online in Anchorage. Thank you.
Can you hear us all right?
Yes, we can hear you very well.
All right. And present at the meeting is a representative, Pinal Barry, Representative Thompson, Representative Gall, and myself, Representative Boucher, the chair. Conrad, why don't you go ahead and start the presentation off. You have a mic there, and if you could push that button forward so that everybody is, you know.
Can everybody hear me if I set this mic down like this? Can you hear me at Anchorage?
You're coming in a little bit weak, Con.
Okay. I guess I'll have to hold the mic a little closer, and I'll try to do that. Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives of the Telecommunications Committee, I'm really very glad to be here, and I appreciate the invitation to testify before you. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you because as a citizen and as a beneficiary of legislative activities and actions, I want to say that I think you're looking into the future, and I hope that I can convey to you the importance of telecommunications to higher education in the state of Alaska. Especially, I think Alaska has a lot to gain from telecommunications services because, unlike many other states, we are quite rural, undoubtedly the most rural. And in fact, electronics can make us neighbors to the entire world. We don't just have to be neighbors to each other. Well, why are computers and communication important to higher education? I think most of us would recognize that computers and communication have brought about a pretty dramatic, even revolutionary change in the way we do business in modern times. It's much better planning. It's much better to plan for that change than it is to just let us muddle through it. And for that reason, I think this committee can serve a tremendous benefit to the state of Alaska. I really think that communication is a large part of what we do in education, period. I hope that through the use of this committee, you can appreciate the importance of providing data communications to higher education as well as to government. I think some of that will come through. I've got a few slides, and I'll invite any of you here as we go along to stop me when I use terms that are not appropriate. Unfortunately, I do tend to drop into my jargon every once in a while. I'll try not to use that jargon, and I'll try to explain it when I do use it. But nevertheless, please holler if you don't. First of all, the University of Alaska Computer Network, I think, was designed by somebody who was a politician because it stretches from way down in southeast all the way up to northwest, and we do indeed cover the state. But when I go on out to the individual campuses in the University of Alaska, they tell me we don't cover enough. For example, you get out to Nome, and they don't cover Unalakleet. We get to Fairbanks, and they don't get to Tok. No matter where we are, we don't get enough. We don't have enough coverage out to them, not so much to them, because the state of Alaska has good communication facilities to people in the rural areas and throughout Alaska, but we don't have very much communication back the other way. So, for example, if a student is taking a class out in Tok, he has no way to contact his instructor electronically. The instructor can talk to him, but he can't talk back. And that's a big problem, I think. Well, the University of Alaska has, I think, about the most extensive network covering the widest area of any state. I passed around a sheet to all of you, and I hope you'll take a look at that. And I will cover a little bit of it on the screen here as well. And I apologize for those of you in Anchorage. You don't have a copy of these, and I intended to send you a copy, but that's one of the things that I didn't get done, so I can only apologize. First of all, we have about 5,500 miles of long-distance leased telephone lines. We lease those lines from Alaska. Most of them are satellite lines. A few of them are microwave lines, or the equivalent of lines. We support over 500 ports. That's actually quite a bit more than that these days. 7,000 user IDs, and we send throughout our system over 90,000 mail messages per month. You might get the idea that mail is indeed our bread. That's the basics of our network, and is communications, of course, as I mentioned before, but we use an awful lot of mail. All of the letters that go to the regents are done by mail. All of the letters that go to chancellors out of the president's office go by electronic mail. I shouldn't say all of them, many of them. Many of the letters that I send to the UACN people around the state, located in Anchorage, Juneau, or wherever they are sent via electronic mail. It's really quite efficient. As a matter of fact, if you pay attention to what some of the studies in business have said, that it takes $25 to $30 to prepare a letter, and multiply $25 or $30 times that 90,000, you find out what the value of the network is, much more than it costs us, frankly. And then, of course, our total log-ons and our total operating budget for FY85. That's really reduced now. As you may well know, I didn't get the reduced figure on there. Question?
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wondered if you could just back up on that mail information again. Now, is that replacing other internal mail of the University of Alaska system, or is that just mail that is directly associated with your computer education programs, or where in the overall budget does that mail component fit?
Okay, the mail is a component of this, a very small component, I'll have to admit. The amount of money that we put into the mail is relatively small, I would guess less than 10% of this budget here, significantly less.
What I mean, are you showing 90,000 pieces of mail, is that correct?
That's correct.
So those replace or do not replace other mail needs of the university? I mean, do you use this for university internal communication in general, or?
Yes. It goes, the letters, as I said, that go to the regents, many of the letters that go to regents go through electronic mail. Each of the regents have a terminal. Letters that go to the chancellors out of the president's office, many of them go through electronic mail.
So are you finding that the memoranda that would normally be sent between those offices is now being sent electronically, and that you're finding not only savings in postage, but in materials and supplies? 90,000 is a lot of units.
I would say so, but I could call upon the people at ACC, where this is used a lot, outside of the UACN, for a comment or two here. Herb may, or somebody else at ACC may want to respond to that. Are you there, Herb?
Yes, I'm here, Con. Speaking as an administrator at ACC, I can assure you that we use the UACN mail daily. I'm averaging now somewhere around 20 pieces of mail in each day, and a comparable number out. We use it for all of our internal communications within the university.
Have you been able to document the cost savings as a result of that?
We have not done anything yet in terms of documenting those savings. However, I can assure you that there is a tremendous saving, not only in time, but also in rapidity of response.
Representative, if I could respond a little bit to that to explain what normally happens. The old way of preparing correspondence is to pick up a dictaphone or to t- type it out on a typewriter, give it to your secretary. She types it out, and chances are she probably typed the message out on a word processor. Then she put it in the mail, it went down, and so it was 3 or 4 days before the next person actually received it. In this case, Chancellor Lyon can sit down and type out his message, and 2 seconds later, when he hits the go button on the terminal, 2 seconds later, the recipient has it in his mailbox.
Thank you very much. I was just wondering, because of course the email system that we have in Legislative Information Office is apparently their number two system in terms of use, and yet compared with the overall amount of correspondence that passes internally within the legislature, I think it's probably hardly being used at all, and it's good to know what the effect has been for the university. Thank you.
I think I would have to say that this is the effect of years of development and training and evolution within the university. I'm sure when electronic mail first came out, it wasn't used anywhere near this frequently.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Representative Pignalberry had a question, but just before it does, if I might, there is a study out which we did a summary on, which you might, it talks about the electronic mail systems in existence. One of the things it points out in talking to the university that there's over 750 accounts, and it says online charges for the mail services are considerably cheaper than the postal services and are added automatically to the user's account. An average message sent on the electronic mail system costs 10 cents when all online charges are considered. So as an average user of electronic mail, there's just no comparison.
And that cost, that figures in the capital costs as well?
This study was done in August 1985 by the Rural Research Agency, and it does. It says online cost when all online charges are considered. So that would be everything, the transmission of it, the utilization of it, and what have
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we're going to. If you do not have a copy, we'll get a copy of each of you. You have one. Yes. I'll ask my AA. You should have had a copy in there.
Earlier, wasn't it?
Representative Pignalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the university, whoever's doing this cost analysis, I'd be interested in knowing how many of the 82 employees are figured in, and what other overhead costs are figured in when you compare the effective cost of using the electronic mail versus postage. My question to you directly, Mr. Weeks, is that that budget for FY85, I'm indicating that it has been cut for 86. Did you give me the amount for that?
No, the FY85 budget is considerably less than this due to lack of realization of income, and B, due to a recent cut that we took.
Can you give us the actual numbers?
The reduction in income was $100,000. Give me a 10% error rate here. $100,000 cut there, and the cut in budget for statewide was, I think, in the neighborhood of $200,000. Right close to that.
We're talking about $6 million, basically, instead of 6.5.
Yes, yes.
For 86, what is
it? The request that went in, was including all of the increments, was something like close to $7 million. That included the increments necessary to support the maintenance for a new administrative computer system. So it did take quite a significant jump there for that system.
Representative Dave, or Thompson, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if you could, relative to your FY86 budget request, the documents here speak to campuses, how this system serves each campus, would you please, A, define the definition of a campus, B, does that 86 request include new sites?
I can't think of a way to define the campus other than a major administrative unit, and that wouldn't explain it either. But for example, we have a community college. Each one of the community colleges would be considered a campus. So there are community colleges at Bethel. I'm sure you're familiar. Do you want me to name them? Or?
No, I am familiar with them. You okay. Mentioned, for instance, that the a request to have the system extend to Tolk.
Oh, yes, okay.
Is Tolk a campus?
No.
Okay. Okay. Does your 86 request contain any new sites?
Specifically, no. We did have a joint request in with the Department of Administration to serve additional sites. I'm not sure what the status of that budget request is, frankly. I understand it's not now being, it was not included in the governor's request.
I'm sorry, what is your function here with the system?
I'm executive director of the computer network.
And you're not familiar with your own budget request?
That was not my budget request, Representative. That came from the Department of Administration. It was a joint request from them. And my understanding from the Department of Administration was that the governor did not include it. I apologize. There's an awful lot about the network I'm not familiar with. Believe me, if I were, I would be one of the, I would be a genius.
I admit
to not being such, too.
Just a quick one here.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I inquired earlier today of another individual what it would take to hook up the legislative telecom or the legislative email system with the Department of Education's system that works through the school districts. And I see in here that their system and your system at the university are working together. What kind of hardware did you need to do that? What system is the university using? It's not using email, it's using a different system, is that correct?
I am not familiar with those two mail systems working together. To my knowledge, they do not communicate with each other.
It says in this book that, let's see if I can find it here, it says that the school districts, the State Board of Education, and the University of Alaska Teacher Placement Office, maybe that's a separate.
They are using, if I may, they are all using UACN in that instance. In other words, the Department of Education is, to my understanding in that particular area, that you're talking about are using UACN, but as far as the networks and the mail systems being compatible, but to the best of my knowledge, a general overall statement on that would be, no, they're not, and that's one of the areas that this committee can really address its attention to.
I see. So then when it says here that University of Alaska Teacher Placement Office is using the EMS system, which I guess stands for something which is not defined here. Yeah, I guess electronic mail system of the Department of Education, that they're just online with that system rather than the other way around, rather than the school districts being in any way hooked into the university system. Is there somebody online or yourself who can speak to what is necessary to get all of these systems working together? It seems that it would be certainly more productive if we could access your system and vice versa.
Peter, let me field that one for you. That's what this committee is all about. Technology is changing so fast that one of the roles that we are playing is to bring the various players. There is no simple, quick answer to that right now. But if you read that entire thing and it talks about at the tail end, it gives a summary there of the problems that face us. But
I guess my question, Mr. Chairman, was based on a comment that was made to me today by legislative affairs staff that all they needed to get connected with the Department of Education system was a modem.
of some sort that was manufactured.
That's true, and in other words, to connect a computer to another computer, all you need is a modem, which is simply a modulator, demodulator. You could take any computer and connect up as I can dial in to UACN and do, as you can dial into Alexis and do. But to be able to go through all of the systems through one calming switching mechanism does not at the present time exist. A modem is simply a telephone line to the other system. Yes, that's all they would need, would be a modem to call their system up from their computer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dulles, if I could expand on where we are in our intercomputer communication services. We have the mail now on a Honeywell computer. That computer is very old. We need to phase it off of that old system and onto newer computer systems. The newer computer systems are the VAX computer systems. We have one located in Anchorage, Juneau, and in Fairbanks each. We do have a mail system now that is operational on those three mail systems, and they can exchange information from one VAX to another. That's one step, and that's, as Representative Boucher has said, that's the first easy step. The next step will be to get those VAX computers to talk to other computers like our administrative computer system, which is an IBM. And that's a non-trivial step, but one that we expect will be working within a year or two. There are some systems now to facilitate that. The technology is going too slow there for most of us, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Excuse me just a second. For the record, Representative Wallace and Representative Collins. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I did distribute, along with the packet of information that you have before you, a map of the University of Alaska computer network. And if you take a look at that map, you'll see there are numbers on there that indicate the cost of the leased lines between those sites. And you'll notice an inordinate cost between Anchorage and Fairbanks and in Fairbanks and Juneau. And the reason for that is that we have several lines going between those locations. In Anchorage, in the case of Anchorage, we have four lines. In Juneau, we have two lines.
Those
are monthly costs. Sorry. Thank you. I should have notified or put that on the map, I guess. Also, the number of terminals that are located at each of those sites at the present time is indicated above the name of the town. That's for your information. This second one probably won't meaningful to you, but it does indicate diagrammatically what our data communications network looks like. It's a very technical map, and I don't expect to spend any time on it. I'd be glad to meet with you individually and describe what the network is about, if you'd like, or how the network does take place technically.
Representative Pignalberry.
Mr. Deese, you mentioned that the Honeywell computer was old and that you had to replace it. Just being old, I know that's not necessarily bad or wrong, but what is the real problem with it?
The major problem is that it's becoming very expensive to maintain, Representative. As computers grow old, they become more and more expensive to maintain. Manufacturers have introduced new systems, and in fact, Honeywell has long ago introduced a replacement system for this, and as a result, it's becoming more expensive for them to maintain it. They pass that cost back to us. Secondly, as systems are old, you can't get parts for them. Well, the UACN has grown so rapidly that we've really, and this is not any different, we're not any different from any other network, I don't think, or any other computing facility, that we've really had to be innovative, and we've tried to be innovative in the way we designed the network, and I'd like to discuss that a little bit with you now and more later. The average cost, it has been estimated, the average increase in the growth of higher education, data communications, and computing technology budgets has been about 24%. So with that kind of a growth, you can see that we are scrutinized very carefully. In Alaska, in order to help this, we did, of course, contact Jim Shea, and Jim Shea has contacted us when he felt it was necessary, and we are doing some sharing in our networks right now. For example, our staffs have gotten to know each other and we've relied upon each other for technological support, consulting support, in other words, essentially free consultants that we get from IRM. And they do have some very knowledgeable people down here and we've appreciated that very much. We've shared some training. And that's been beneficial. Training to us is a very expensive proposition because most of the time we can't find it in state, we go out of state, and if it weren't for the Information Resource Management Department here in Juneau and in Anchorage, we would have to go outside of the state for almost all training. And we appreciate that opportunity for sharing. We are supporting a 3725 in the computing center at Fairbanks for the Information Resource Management Department. In other words, it's their box that resides in our department. We anticipate
Tom,
the use...
Yes. Tom, what's the 3725?
Thank you. Sorry about that. That's a data communications control unit. Okay? Thank you.
Well, what's a data communications control unit?
Go ahead. All right. Good question again. A data communications control unit is a computer in itself that accepts information from one computer or one or more terminals and kicks it down a telephone line to another computer or two terminals. So that at the other end of the telephone line, at the other end of a long telephone line, you can have another 3725, or you can have a terminal of another type, or you could have a different kind of computer. The 3725 is a special computer that handles communications for the regular, what we generally call the computer system. Hope that was somewhat helpful. Okay, our goal is really to have to share all facilities wherever they help us. However, we also have to remember that our primary goal is productivity, and that's really where we're at with regard to computing in general. I think we have no reason for existing if it is not to be more productive as educators or whatever we happen to be. And in fact, specifically in the University of Alaska Computer Network, I think that our goal is to make people in the University of Alaska more productive, or to be more specific, we really have to help them use technology to make themselves more productive. So electronic mail, as I mentioned, is a big part of that. That's one small part, however, and we can cover much more of that. I think that an important area is in the area of office costs. I would call to your attention that you don't have to pick up many documents to find out how fast technology is decreasing in cost. I'm sorry, Representative. You can't see through me, can't you?
Lower that a little bit, please, Alex.
You bet. How's that better? Okay. The cost of automation, as I said, is decreasing at the rate of 20% per year. The cost of office services are increasing tremendously. Just the cost of personnel alone, I just read in a recent report, is going up 7% per year. Anywhere between 6 and 8% per year, the cost of what? Furthermore, the demand for office services is increasing tremendously. So there's eventually going to be a time in here when it will become more and more cost-effective for us to use automated technology in place of other services or to enhance services. I'll give you the results of a study that was done, and this study is kind of old, but it's still the most recent one I have. If you take a look at what happened in American industry in the years 1967 to 1977, I think those are pretty good years in industry, by the way, they invested $30,000 per factory worker. As a result of that investment, they got an increase in productivity of 84%. In the information worker, the faculty member, the government worker, excuse me?
We're trying to see.
Oh, sorry. Did you have a question?
No.
In the case of the information worker, we invested a total amount of $2,500 in that same year, and as you might expect, we got a correspondingly small improvement in productivity. So I think we need to look at improving productivity using technology and communications to improve productivity of faculty members in higher education. Well, how can we make ourselves more productive? We've already talked about electronic mail. electronic filing of information. We can talk about electronic exchange of documents. I've participated with my colleagues at other universities and prepared documents that we exchange electronically for a joint talk, for example. Researchers are doing this consistently. If you stop and think about it, all information starts electronically. Whether it's a typewriter, most typewriters are electrical nowadays, and it should end up that way as well, even books. In fact, if you stop and think about it, I think there might be some money to be made there someplace if we can do it on a big enough scale. The cost of curriculum, cost of higher education, is really constrained by the cost of information. And if you've bought a textbook lately, you know what that cost is, and then you find out that that textbook is about 3 or 4 years old, too, and doesn't have the latest information. How can we get the latest information? I think Representative Boucher could give you a much better discourse on this than I can, but certainly things like the source contain the latest information. Information like information services like Dow Jones, and I've distributed a couple of examples for you there. For example, the new service that is now being provided by the Public Broadcasting Service, IBM Corporation, and Merrill Lynch. It's an online data communication service, and you can read that at your leisure. There are others. I think, I guess I don't have a copy of it here, but I think you have it in your packet. Other networks as well that now provide home data processing service, information via your home computer. I think that's going to be a tremendous advantage to people when they can get information in a more timely fashion. They can make money and make themselves more productive by getting information quicker. There are many other things. Electronic banking, I don't need to tell you about that. I don't need to tell you about the information that is available for computer-assisted instruction. I was just talking to Jim Shea at lunch today, as a matter of fact, and he was reminiscing about the fact that who provides the most education now for Ford Motor Company. I understand all of Ford Motor Company's education comes from Boeing Computer Services. That doesn't make it, it doesn't mean it. If it's education for writing a letter or education for writing a COBOL program, it all comes from Boeing Computer Services, or BCS as they call themselves these days. Business has found a way to make education productive. I think if you take a look, too, at where the big companies are going, if you followed the recent breakup of AT&T, many people think that the reason that they were willing to settle the way they did is so that they could get into the computer and communications business in a big way without the constraints that were on them before. IBM clearly is in the communications business. They started Communication Satellite along with a couple of other companies years ago, and they purchased a telephone company. I think it's clear that communications is going to play a big part in industry and business in the future. Another interesting example of how what's happening in industry is the and in education is the workstation of the future, in which case we have one workstation which handles voice communications. And by the way, did you know that voice is data now? The newer switching mechanisms, the newer switching telephone systems actually digitize data rather than the old transmission services, which were analog. And they say it's much more reliable. It can also be stored as digital information. So you have voice, you have data, and you have video all over the same workstation. It's kind of a fascinating possibility, and it's here today. I think the University of Alaska Computer Network would do well to put a lot of emphasis in communications networks in the future, and we intend to do that. Electronic mail distribution, electronic conferencing, voicemail, and image printing. All of those will require vast communications facilities. Well, I don't want to go on and on here, but I do want to give you an indication of what I think the University of Alaska Computer Network will be doing in the next few years. We know that there is a significant effort going on in the state right now to join libraries in the state in what is called the Gnosis system. I don't know how many of you have heard about that, but that is providing online access to all of the books at all of the libraries so that If I'm at Unalakleet and I want to access a certain title, I can get on the library. I can search through the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I can search through the State Library or other library networks, library systems, and get that book. Information services and data banks, the libraries already belong to many of those. I would see the University of Alaska Computer Network serving as a vehicle to provide access from the individual's terminal, whether they're located in Anchorage or wherever, to go through the network and get out to those information services. One of the benefits that we can receive by doing that is that now if you have two different computers in your that you need to use regularly, you will need a terminal into that computer and another terminal into that computer. So you'll have two terminals on your desk. Through a network with a switching system like we have here, and I can describe that to you if you're interested, we can go from one terminal and let the switch handle which computer we access. We can access any one of these. Collaborating, of course, between scientists for research purposes, state agencies for other mail systems. I think this is one thing that we would like the network to do. We would like it to collaborate with experts, futurists, for example. Special resources, special research computers or special educational computers, computer-assisted instruction systems, that sort of thing, and other universities in general.
Representative Galbary.
Mr. Dietz, can you tell us how this network fits in with the academic program at the university?
Well, I'm sure I'll leave out much of the activity. However, let me indicate that the majority of students, or I shouldn't say the majority, I take that back, many students have their own computer now. They access the computers that they use in their instructional process from their home or from their dorm room through the computer network. That's one way. Secondly, the things that they're learning in engineering and in business, wherever they are, whether they're learning to use a spreadsheet or whatever, they use the computer resources and therefore the network to access those software programs. The network also provides cost savings because instead of having three different copies of the same program, we can have one copy, and the student at Juno does not miss out because of the fact that they don't have that copy of the program on their computer. They can log on to the Anchorage computer where that copy is located and use it there. I don't know if that gets at the beginning of your question or not.
No, as a matter of fact, it raises more questions because, students have to buy books. And if they want to use a spreadsheet program, I guess we could require that for a certain course, they could be required to buy Logo or SuperCalc or VisiCalc or something. And that's probably much more cost effective than spending a lot of money on the network. I'm trying to figure out how the network itself really helps the students do their academic business.
Well, let's take an example of a student at Bethel, because this might be this gives me a good example. There are others I could think of. If it were not for the network, the student at Bethel would have to have a computer system that would provide the equivalent service that he gets through the network. So, for example, they'd have to have a VAX computer system out there with, say, I think they have 17 terminals or something like that, all told, or 8 terminals. They have 30 terminals at Bethel. Some of those would be administrative terminals. So let's say they have 15 academic terminals out there. They would have to have a computer system capable of handling 15 terminals. They would have to have a basic compiler. They'd have to have all of the different languages, which cost money, by the way, all of the different documentations. And they'd have to have somebody there to run that computer, a computer operator. They would also have to have a computer system manager to manage that computer system. So by going through the network, they can avoid many of those costs.
I think, Con, we live with this and we understand. I think really what, if I may, what Representative Pinalberry is asking is how is this helping us to get to the basics of education? In other words, the role of a network in accomplishing what a student is going to school. In other words, the resource that's contained within the box, so to speak. There's often a tendency to think just in terms of a computer network, but as a tool to enhance a person's education. I think that might be the direction in the question that we're concerned about. Less about the wizardry of the electronic age and more about how it's going to help us be cost effective in bringing quality education to the state.
I'm still not sure I understand what you're asking, but let me say this. If you're talking about computer-assisted instruction, actually teaching the student mathematics, nothing. In fact, I shouldn't say nothing, but very little. We are not really utilizing the technology at that high a level yet. We're still worried about less or more mundane, I think, activities, such as, are we graduating a student with the necessary skills to be productive as an engineer, to be productive as an accountant, and that sort of thing. In order to be productive as an accountant, they have to understand automated accounting systems. In order to be an engineer, they have to understand automated graphics systems, graphics design. Maybe somebody at Anchorage would better be able to answer that than I could. I'm sorry, Representative, I'm just doing the best I can.
Right.
Well, I guess essentially that covers what I wanted to talk about. I think that there are very few organizations that are involved in information to the extent that higher education is. We create it, we disseminate it, we store it for posterity and for use by future generations. Higher education certainly has a need for vast amounts of information, and it has broad applicability, I think, in teaching, research, and administration, more and more in administration, as a matter of fact. Alaska needs a strong higher education institution, I believe.
Excuse me.
I can wait until you finish.
All right.
Sorry. Alaska really needs a strong higher education institution in order to continue us as a viable contributor to the welfare of the state of Alaska in terms of business and industry and in personal service. In many cases, I think communications facilities are the only game in town for us. We can't do as we did years ago. Go and visit somebody. That used to be the only way of communication. Then we developed mail and the Pony Express and all of that. We have that. We made a big step forward when we developed mail. And I think we made an even greater step forward when we developed telegraph and telephone. I think, if I am reading the newspapers right, that industry is taking another great leap forward in providing information electronically and also providing the means to disseminate that information more effectively throughout the individuals. I think in closing, I would just quote from Dr. Richard Van Horn, who was the chancellor of the University of Houston. And he said, in the future, I don't see millions of kids learning to use computers. I see millions of kids using computers to learn. And I think we need to keep track of that in higher education. It's a quote that I, or it's a philosophy I'm trying to live by.
Thank you, Tom. Are there any questions?
I have a question. You indicated that you presently have a Honeywell which is outdated and you're going to have to replace. Are you thinking of,
yeah,
are you thinking of buying new equipment or buying another piece of equipment?
Yes, we already did. The legislature appropriated something like $6 million to upgrade the computing facilities for academic and administrative computing. That has been done.
Have you considered leasing?
Yes, we have considered it, and I think we will continue to consider it. In this case, we did have adequate funds in that capital appropriation for the initial step in that system.
Representative Boucher, I have a concern. In listening to him speak, he's got a computer that is outdated and apparently we need a new one. The same thing is occurring with the Department of Labor. have one of the reasons it's so difficult for them to adapt their equipment is because it's outdated and it costs so much money to fix it and adapt it. The same thing is happening when I was at Jim Shea's, and he showed me around. They have millions of dollars worth of computer equipment that is outdated, that they are hoping to phase out, and they've just bought another multi-million computer. And it would seem to me, in my own business, at least it could be obsolete as soon as you make the first payment on them, that perhaps we might consider leasing or have a policy where we lease our equipment so at least we can have updated equipment. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Deese, I'm still trying to get a handle on how the system is used and for what the main purpose is. And you talked about the mail, but you said that was really a minor part of what the system is used for. I see we've got 111,000 logons per month. Can you tell me who most of those logons are?
Yes. Most of those would be students. Students use it to learn to program computers, to learn to use computer packages like statistical analysis systems, graphics packages, engineering design packages, file management systems, that sort of thing. They're learning to use BASIC, Fortran, COBOL, C, and many of the other computer languages that are popular in industry and business today. Did I do better that time?
No, that's the information I was going to ask the right question.
I think we've got Anchorage standing by with Joe Joyner, who many of you, I'm sure, know. He is an instructor and has been for a long time at the University of ACC. And Eddie Lynch, the Office of Instructional Telecommunication, and Mim Carlson, the Social Sciences Division. And you've had an opportunity to listen in to some of the questions, and I would appreciate hearing some input back from you. One thing I might say to the committee is that Con is the engineer. He's putting the system together, so if he was unable to answer some of the questions that would normally direct the educator, no more would you call up dialogue and ask the electronic engineer what is the purpose of the different databases. I think one of the points that was made here is, we said earlier, let's say, for example, you want to do WordStar, which I know you're familiar with, or SuperCal, you don't have to have 15 computers with 15 programs. Supposedly they are going to put a word processing program there that you could use your little $1,000 computer and go into the system and use one program with many people. And I'm sure you're probably aware of that, but one of the things that I did want to point out that Con has just recently come to the university and is taking a look at the engineering facets, the things that you brought up, duplication of cost, and et cetera. So sitting at the other end of the line, though, are some of the educators who have the responsibility for taking this technology and dispensing it to us. Pete, Representative Gall.
Thank you, sir. Just one last technical question, though. I was wondering if maybe you could provide any sort of detail for me on what is needed to deal with compatibility between these systems. I understood Representative Boucher's answer, but nonetheless, we've got the university system, the legislators, legislature's system, the administration system. The idea that I can't use email to send you a letter seems unfortunate. Maybe comment a little bit on where we're headed to get these systems working compatibly. For that matter, the fact that I can't access your library seems a little unfortunate, too.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. The best way I can perhaps give you an analogy to our situation, our dilemma, if you will, is that if you buy a generator, an electronic generator for an automobile, and you take it home, you find out it won't fit your Chevrolet because it was made for a Ford. And that's exactly what happens in the case of electronic mail systems and many other software programs as well. We buy an IBM computer. Worse yet, we buy a certain brand of IBM computer, and we take it home and try to put it on our other level of IBM computer, and it doesn't fit. So we buy the software package for the VAX computer, and it doesn't fit on the IBM computer or the Honeywell computer. Thank you. That's one analogy. But I could get even worse than that, because now it has just recently become feasible to easily communicate between two computers of the same manufacturer, because you know you have to leave the language of that particular computer and go into the telephone language, which has been an analog language. So you convert your digital signal within the computer to an analog signal, you send it over the telephone line, and then it gets down to the other computer, and they can begin to receive that information. So it's a matter of talking between different manufacturers, different personalities, I guess, and different highways.
Okay, maybe I'm not making myself clear. I appreciate your comments, and I'm familiar with that information. One of the problems that we have is that when you bring the Ford generator in and you have a Chevrolet, instead of going back to the store and getting a Chevrolet generator, they go to the store and they buy a Ford. And that seems to be the behavior pattern. That is the problem, but that understanding the problem is no solution. The solution is, what do we have to buy to now use this intermediary of the telephone to put those systems together? Because the only other solution is to throw out one of those systems, and is it going to be yours or is it going to be ours, is my question. Historically, it's often been the most expensive one to replace that gets thrown out. And then when you get into cost efficiency, you have a poor starving agency like Health and Social Services having to explain why their caseloads are not being processed more quickly after $2.5 million worth of software expenditure, etc. So rather than belabor the problems, what are we going to in fact recommend as the solution? Because I still need the legislative affairs system to communicate with the university system as soon. So where can we head to solve the problem, and how much will it cost? Or does it mean that we have to scrap one of these systems in order to get two systems to communicate?
Well, I think the day has gone by when we can expect us all to have the same kind of system. We're all going to, you know, the number of different systems out there is innumerable, and it will continue to be varied, that's for sure. So we really have to look at ways in which we can make those different systems talk to each other. So I don't see why the IBM systems talk to the VAX, our IBM system to talk to the Department of Administration.
What is available technologically, and at what cost to accomplish that precise problem? Well, I hear from many of the salespeople that this one says I can sell it for $10,000, and this one says for $10, and this one says $100,000. Thought I would ask our
witness. It's not available. It could be done.
Yep. Well, excuse me, when you're speaking about communicating between, for example, my display writer hooked up to 3270 and the school system's telecopying system in there in a given school, then they tell me that that is possible. When we're talking about getting the entire LAA system hooked up to the entire university system, that's clearly more expensive problem to address, but I've heard so much conflicting answer to that although I certainly respect all of your judgments on this, I've got a lot of salesmen telling you they can sell us such a product, so I'm trying to sort out the facts.
That's the last one you listened to.
Yeah, I guess.
Can I take another shot at that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wonder if I can take another shot at that, because I think I understand where you're coming from. First of all, and I'm not aware of everything that's new on the market. I admit there may be some fancy salesman out there that's got some brand new piece of software, some new hardware that does it all. I doubt it. What the salesmen have are tools to assist you in communicating from one computer to another. For example, we just bought a package that will reside within the VAX computer systems to make the VAX look like an IBM computer. And that's the package we intend to use to exchange mail. However, it takes people time to install that package and make it run. So it's not a matter of just dropping gas into the car and taking off. It's a matter of fine-tuning it to run on that particular computer system. And that may be the trouble you have with your departmental agency.
To me, though, this is a non-answer. All I'm saying is, are you telling me then that the IBM system in this building and your system at the university will never be compatible or can never communicate between one another? And if so, I'd like to hear it. If not, I'd like to know what we need to be looking for to solve the problem. I appreciate the theory, but I'd like to know where it's going to fit in the budget. Either it is or it isn't.
Well, I seem to be answering a lot of the wrong questions, and I'll try again. There are many different solutions to the problems that you're alluding to. A, I'm saying that the computer systems that we have will never be 100% compatible with the systems here. That was one of your questions. The second question was, what do we need to communicate between the two? There are two different ways. You can have the computers talk directly to each other, or a third way that is coming on the market now, and actually it's been on the market but not very well utilized, and not total either, just partial solution, is to put a computer in between my computer and your computer, and everything I send to that computer, and it then converts it so that it can be understood by the next computer down the line.
And the cost involved?
I don't know.
Maybe you can help me out.
Well, okay. What he's saying about putting the computer in the middle is that sometimes you can go ahead and buy the hardware and existing software off the shelf to do the translation between language A and language B. And that's not so expensive when it's already been manufactured and it's there between two different kinds of machines. But if you go ahead and change one of the terminals on either end, suddenly this black box in the middle of the program doesn't do the translating anymore because it's different. So you've got to go out and hire somebody to write the translation programs and maybe put a few different kind of circuit boards in the translating machine. And that could cost, geez.
All I'm driving at is before they go and they spend that money that's been appropriated to buy new hardware, shouldn't we have these questions answered?
Yeah, well, sure.
And frankly, no matter how hard it may seem, if we're sending, you know, mail on a screen to people in the legislature and we can't send it up to the governor's office, because this hasn't been addressed in advance before both systems were purchased, then I think we've got, you know, a multi-million-dollar management problem that just doesn't get satisfied by theoretical answers. Either we can communicate between these systems, or we can't. Either there's a product on the market, or there isn't. If there is, how much does it cost? If there isn't, that's the answer. There's no product. That's what the chairman said. There's no product. But as I say, I don't always hear that there's no problem.
John, may I inject one thing? We're about at 2 minutes past one, and we still haven't heard from the people at the university who might put some input. I guess maybe the question, to your frustration, that's why I felt a special committee on telecommunications was all about. To explore the answers, to bring the people together. Because really, in the final analysis, we are just about at the stage when the automobile, you crank one, you use the spark. So a lot of this information technology is just beginning to develop. And I think that part of our thing, in the questions that you're asking, we'll bring these answers to the table. There are some of them right now that in my limited experience, there aren't answers to just a simple thing of making my Epson be able to tie in to the Alexis machine. We're still, it's new, and part of the role of this committee can be to bring the various expertise together in the state as we're doing it now, or at least an attempt to do that. But I'd like to hear from the people in Anchorage. Who wants to lead off there?
Chairman, this is Joe Joyner in Anchorage. I guess I've been selected to lead off for that.
Go ahead, Joe. We've got about 10 minutes here, and they've got to set up another conference.
This is Bill, the moderator in Juneau, hailing Anchorage. Senator Lyon, are you online? Yes, please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Joe.
I seem to have had a little bit of problem here on the mics. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and your committee for the opportunity to speak briefly with you this afternoon. We've been listening to Mr. Dietz explain the UACN system, and we'd like to add on to his comments and to respond to some of the questions from a user's point of view, specifically with respect to the various applications that, as educators, we find not only useful but exciting. We've been involved with the computer network here in the university for a number of years, ever since it began. And as an instructor, as an educator, my particular uses of that range all the way from the use of electronic mail, which has been mentioned here. I'm looking very much looking forward to the advent of Gnosis, which is the library retrieval system that we'll have very soon. I've been engaged in both as a student as well as a teacher in computer conferencing using the computer network, and we find many opportunities for some applications in that area. More recently, we here at ACC have become extremely excited about the opportunity that was afforded us last month to participate with the University of Wisconsin in the development of still another computer-driven technology, which is being developed at the University of Wisconsin. And to explain that technology, it'll be necessary to go into a very brief background. The University of Wisconsin today is a part of what is known as the National Electronic Text Consortium, which is made up of the University of Wisconsin Telecommunications Extension, San Diego University, University of Nebraska, and WGHB, which is a public broadcasting station in Boston. That consortium is being operated under a grant from the Annenberg CPB Foundation. Develop this electronic text capability.
Sorry to interrupt. This is Bill, the moderator in Juneau. We're having trouble hearing you.
Am I breaking up? Or is my
Yes, actually, it appears as if distance from the mic is varying.
Wait, okay. Keep going. The University of Wisconsin, as a member of this consortium, agreed as part of its responsibility to develop electronic text materials which would support a public broadcasting system course, which is called Congress We the People. That course is a telecourse which has been successfully delivered all over the country, including here at ACC, and it consists of 26 parts. It's a 13-week series, and it's designed essentially for freshman, sophomore students desiring to learn something of the operations of Congress in a political science context. It's also designed as a telecourse to reach distant learners away from the campus. I might explain as a sideline here what electronic text really means. And as it's currently being defined, it includes print as well as graphic information, which is stored basically in computers and then distributed either over telephone lines, through satellite communications, cable networks, or broadcast transmission, and accessed by users through personal computers or through special decoding terminals. The word video text, which is very much part of this project, is used when electronic text is interactive, when it is two-way, between the computer and the user, and used in such a way that the user can both send information to the computer as well as receive information. The word teletext, which is associated with and as a companion piece to video text, is used when the electronic text is delivered to the user in a one-way stream, and the user can only make selections as to what parts of the information they want, usually from a menu that is presented to them. Last month, ACC was invited by the University of Wisconsin to participate with them in a site test involving this particular course, Congress We the People. And since we had successfully offered the course last fall in a broadcast context, and because Alaska proves to be a very interesting and unique congressional district to use as a model for the text itself, they've asked us to participate with them. We are readying ourselves to test this component in a special non-broadcast mode beginning March 18th. The teaching strategies that I will be using will be including the video text, will include audio conferencing, computer conferencing, videotapes, as well as the print and study materials that are normally used in conjunction with this course. The student's progress will be essentially using these tools, will be essentially a self-paced mode under direction from the instructor, in this case being myself. Wisconsin has previously tested this technology there at this university and in Wisconsin at some of their other university locations. And the results of those prior tests have indicated a much higher level of success using this video text technology than by non-users in the same class. In this particular test that we are going to be engaged in this spring, we will be simulating the broadcast by having the students simply view the video tapes in advance. Their access to the video text will be different as we will construct the student body. Some of them will be using what is known as a
Joe
in their homes, and that terminal will be connected through the telephone to CompuServe Network, which is a national informational network similar to the source, and using a mainframe which is located on the University of Wisconsin campus to access and to
when
interact
you have to
with
set up for your next meeting
the video text material. Under normal conditions, where a course like that would be broadcast over the air, a different kind of technology is used involving a special decoding device.
Excuse me, this is Bill, the moderator, and Juno. Sorry to interrupt.
test, we won't be using a decoder for students. It will be issuing them a special terminal, which is nothing more than a modem and a keyboard.
Excuse me, Mr. Joyner?
Yeah,
Mr. Joyner? Excuse me.
Yeah,
this is Bill, the moderator in Juneau. Please stand by.
Joe, unfortunately, we've gone 15 minutes past the time, and as it seems to happen on each one of our committees on telecommunication, we've got more material than we've got time, and that would just appear that we're going to have to come back and address this subject again. I want to apologize because some of the other members of the committee have to leave. And I know that Mr. Lynch and Mim are also there, so probably what we are just going to have to do is have a continuation of this particular meeting. And my apologies for having to cut you off here.
Well, I'm sorry, too, Mr. Chairman. We're standing ready to continue. I think that we have some very interesting applications of computers in education and distance delivery, which have implications for telecommunications generally, and we would welcome the opportunity to continue this testimony.
Joe, I want to thank you very much and thank Eddie and Mim and also Chancellor Lyon. As you can see, there's lots of questions. There's probably more questions than there are answers. But one of the things that we have found out, especially with meeting the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, and the other, that usually you could go into this for 2 or 3 hours and there's not enough time to cover the subject matter. So we definitely, I'll be talking to Con before he heads back to Fairbanks, and we'll definitely be rescheduling this. If in the meantime you can get as much information down to us as possible that I might be able to distribute to the rest of the members of the committee, it'd be very much appreciated. And thank you very much, Anchorage.
Thank you, sir, and we'll be sending you some printed material very soon.
This is Bill, the moderator in Juneau. This concludes this afternoon's teleconference with the House Special Committee on Telecommunication. Thank you.
Now we'll adjourn the meeting at 2:15.